most of the incentives that we work with are incremental tax. In other words, if this didn't happen, these property taxes would not exist. So no existing property taxes are going to support these type of developments, whether it's an RHID or tax increment financing for a commercial development or something like that. So there are no existing taxes being captured. But it really is the only way that a developer can make this work in today's environment.
I'm Christina Gianni with the Hayes Post and Eagle Radio, and I'm speaking with Doug Williams of Grow Hayes about an incentive district for the Grove on this episode of the Hayes Post podcast.
This was a program that was actually established by the state of Kansas back in around 2012 or 2013. And at that time, it was a rural housing incentive district because the rule was a community had to be less than 60,000 people in the county to be able to use this tool. Since that time, they have opened it up to all counties, and so thus the name change to Revitalization Housing Incentive District, kind of a mouthful. But essentially what it does, it allows a developer to recover the cost of their infrastructure over a period of time as opposed to having to build it into the price of the lot. And so it really is the only way, at least in our community and in most communities right now, that development is really feasible at all. And so this tool, basically what it does is you've got a wheat field right now that's generating $200 a year in property tax. When it's built out and has 50 houses on it, it's generating $150,000 a year in property tax. The RHID allows the developer to capture a significant portion of that increment, the difference between the $200 and the $150,000, until they have recovered their eligible cost in the development.
Well, something that people, I think, get confused about this is that this doesn't mean that taxes are going up for anybody. It's capturing taxes that don't even exist yet.
That's exactly right. Most of the incentives that we work with are incremental tax. In other words, if this didn't happen, these property taxes would not exist. So no existing property taxes are going to support these type of developments, whether it's an RHID or tax increment financing for a commercial development or something like that. So there are no existing taxes being captured. But it really is the only way that a developer can make this work in today's environment. And I'll give you an example. If you've been out by the Tallgrass development that Heart of America is doing, they've started construction on the Wheatland Drive portion of that development. It's 12 lots along Wheatland Drive. And those 12 lots are going to cost to put in the street, sewer, water, electricity, and gas about $850,000 to $900,000 for 12 lots. When you do the math on that, that's about $75,000 per lot just in hard costs. And then if a developer was to do that, obviously they'd want to make a little bit of money. So you're talking about a lot that would need to sell for $90,000 to $100,000. And that's just not feasible in our market. Nobody's able or willing to pay that amount. So what an RHID does is allow the developer to recover some of those development costs through the tax increment over up to a 25-year period of time and sell that lot. In this particular case, they've sold the lots to the builder for $25,000 each. So about $50,000 per lot, less than what it costs them, but they know they're going to get the rest of that money back over a period of time through the tax increment that is created when those homes are built on those lots.
And that would make those added costs would make that cost prohibitive for the buyer of the home, because that's going to add that much more on to the cost of the home.
Absolutely. And you know, we've had a rise in mortgage rates, and so affordability is a challenge. And so it's really necessary to use some of these tools to try and get some level of growth and some level of construction going on, because without them, it just wouldn't happen.
I know that you had spoken in the recent housing quarterly luncheon that there had been some effort in the legislature to even get rid of some of these incentives. But is that still something that the legislature is dealing with?
Well, I think it's a not a bill, but a concept that's in committee being looked at. And what they were attempting to do was say that any city or municipality that provided any types of incentives could not exceed their revenue neutral rate that they are required to report on each year in terms of their budgets going up. And while the cause is maybe noble, to keep property taxes in line and reduce property taxes, the consequences of that type of legislation would be, at least in our community, the end of development, because local governments are not able to keep their budgets the same year in, year out. Costs go up. And so to eliminate their ability to offer incentives, whether it be an RHID, whether it be a TIF, whether it be industrial revenue bonds or whatever it might be to promote development, would pretty much be stifled. And again, if you go back and look at where these tax dollars come from, it's only incremental dollars. So if a local government doesn't offer these incentives, essentially they're betting that this project is going to happen anyway. And I can assure you, in the ones that I've been involved with, that they would not happen without these incentives, without these programs. So at the end of the day, it really costs the taxpayer nothing, because they wouldn't happen without these.
And it's not taking away any budget money from the current budgets from the county or the city or the school district, because it's money that doesn't exist.
That's correct. You know, one could argue perhaps that when you have additional development, you have some requirements for additional police, additional fire, those type of things. But it's all very incremental in that nature. So basically, it does not cost the taxpayers anything. And ultimately, those properties will be on the tax rolls when the developer has recovered those eligible costs. So long term, they're going to be in the tax rolls. And you have to also consider all the positive things that come from the construction of new projects, whether it be employment of people locally to build them, buying materials, and the sales tax that generates, and the profits that generates for local vendors, just all types of residual positive things that come from that. So overwhelmingly positive and very little negative from my perspective.
We've talked many times about that hierarchy of needs in a community, and housing is right there at the foundation of those, and so important for so many other things to happen in the community. So having these incentives is really important to just the economic growth of the whole community.
It definitely is. And you know, you mentioned the hierarchy of needs, and I've shown it 1,000 times, but housing is the base need. Without adequate housing, you cannot attract a workforce. You cannot retain a workforce. And as we all know, workforce is a huge issue for our area, with unemployment being well below 2% in most months that we've seen here as of late. We've got to have adequate housing, and the only way to get that is using these type of programs.
Doug, for some of our listeners who might be tuning in for the first time, can you tell us just a little bit in general about what the Grove housing project's going to look like? How many houses, and who are they intended for?
Sure. It's the housing is primarily retiree focused, but not retiree exclusive. Anybody that wants to will be able to live there. There's going to be 50 single family patio homes, 8 duplexes or twin homes, however, whatever you want to refer to them, and then 6 to 12 sixplexes that'll be in the corner of 27th and Canterbury. So a total of about 104 to 140 units will be built out there. The homes will be slab on grade construction, zero entry. So again, focusing on accessibility. The construction will be dense, more dense than anything we've seen in our community before in terms of side yard setbacks. You know, they'll be 6 feet apart, which is highly unusual for our community. But that all goes with the concept of low maintenance. You know, there'll be a homeowners association in place that'll take care of lawn care, that'll take care of snow removal, exterior maintenance on the properties for the long haul. So very much a retiree-focused community, but not retiree-exclusive.
And a community center is a really important part of that project.
Definitely. At the front of the development will be the community center that we're putting up that will house the Hay Senior Group, a 77 licensed child care facility, and then a number of gathering rooms that will be available for the community at large, about a 14,000 square foot facility, and it'll be open to the public. And in addition to that, we're going to be putting in a multi-use path through the development, which will tie into Hayes Medical Center's path behind the hospital. We're going to attempt to extend it north to Sternberg Museum area, and that's where this coming summer, the city will be extending that path from Sternberg all the way to Hall Street. So we'll have a lot of miles of a multi-use path in place when this development's done, and after this summer with the path the city's going to be extending.
Is the Grove still looking at relocating the senior center to that community center?
We are. They will relocate once it's done. We plan to start construction on the community center this summer, probably a July kind of start. We anticipate a 11-month construction period to build it out. And so, you know, next June or so, not next June, but a year from this coming June, it should be finished, and the seniors will move in there. The child care facility will open, and we'll be in business.
I've talked to some seniors who are really excited about that prospect because they are all the way out on Old 40 now. Their building is old and deteriorating, and I think this will be more centrally located and a better facility for them.
Definitely a huge improvement for that group. And, you know, this is the seniors are the people who have contributed so much to our community, and we felt it was important that they have a better location, a better place to gather and have activities, and we're going to have even more activities out there, and they'll serve meals out there, and so it'll be much improved, much more accessible. You know, the spot now is a little bit dangerous to get in and out of, particularly when we've got inclement weather and that kind of thing. So this will be a much better situation.
Doug, do you have all the money raised for that community center? Or are you still looking for donors?
We are still looking for donors. We're of the $6 million anticipated construction costs. We've got commitments for about $5,750,000. So we're $250,000 short. We're beating the bushes for that. But if there are people in the community or organizations that would like to contribute towards this project and help us, we would love to talk to you and discuss what it's all about, the details, and talk about how they could help.
So give a call to Grow Hayes.
You betcha.